Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Tonight, in depth, the push to change how people vote across America, what it means and why it's happening. I'm Shepard Smith. This is the news on CNBC.
The Georgia election law. Democrats call it the new Jim Crow.
Just antithetical to who we are.
Republicans claim it tweaks a broken system.
There was nothing remotely involved in suppressing the vote.
Tonight, cutting through the messaging and breaking down what's really in play as Kentucky today becomes the lone red state to expand voting rights. The impact of COVID on the human brain. New today, more than a third of COVID survivors diagnosed with neurological or mental disorders. Investigators reveal the cause of Tiger Woods' crash.
That's unsafe for the conditions.
Tonight, Tiger responds. Deshaun Watson. 22 women accuse him of inappropriate behavior. Now, the fallout turns financial. Plus, how to pay for the White House rescue plan. How the 90s are so right now. And giant lizard slithers in 7-Eleven.
Live from CNBC, the facts, the truth, the news with Shepard Smith.
And good evening. Tonight, something a little different and important for our democracy. We're about to spend considerable time cutting through the noise. It can be deafening and distracting. All the noise around the Georgia voting law is at the center of this political moment. MLB pulled the All-Star game. Activist groups put pressure on big companies to take a stand. Now it's building against the Masters golf tournament. We're live in Atlanta with that coming up. Democrats claim Republicans are trying to make it harder to vote for groups that vote Democrat. Republicans claim they're trying to ensure the integrity of the vote and that business should stay out of politics. Mitch McConnell says it's stupid. President Biden says it's modern day Jim Crow. That's the noise. Our job is to look for the signal. In other words, what's this really all about? Here are the facts. Today's fight is rooted in Georgia's 2018 governor's race. Brian Kemp was the Republican Secretary of State back then, in charge of the election. He beat the Democrat Stacey Abrams to become governor by the slimmest margin in nearly half a century. Abrams cried foul, saying Kemp had removed more than a million Georgians from the voter rolls at the time. The election decided by fewer than 55,000 votes.
Under the watch of the now former Secretary of State, democracy failed Georgia. Georgians of every political party, every race, every region, again.
2 years later, the 2020 election. States across the country began amending their voting laws, expanding access to mail-in ballots because of the pandemic. But Georgia didn't have to. Even before COVID, every Georgian could request an absentee ballot with no excuse. Georgia did, however, set up drop boxes for absentee ballots for the first time in state history. More people could vote more easily. Days after votes were cast, President Trump refused to concede defeat. He claimed rigged election, which it wasn't, and honed in on Georgia, accusing the Republican governor and the state election chief of voter fraud. He leveled false charges that thousands of dead people voted, that there were hundreds of thousands of forged signatures. None of it true.
There's no way we lost Georgia. There's no way. That was a rigged election, but we're still fighting it, and you'll see what's going to happen.
Well, what happened was two Senate runoff races. Democrats won them both. Georgia flipped and Republicans went to work. State legislators, majority Republican, rewrote the election laws. There was no widespread fraud. Republicans admitted the election was perfectly fair. Yet they claim they needed to restore confidence in the state's elections, a confidence that the Republican president eroded. The big lie led to the new law. They wrote a solution for a problem that even the state's top Republican election official admitted at the time does not exist.
Working as an engineer throughout my life, I live by the motto that numbers don't lie. As Secretary of State, I believe that the numbers that we have presented today are correct.
So what does the new law mean for voters in Georgia? Fewer days to request a mail-in ballot, and even fewer to return it. And drop boxes exist, but barely. Republicans counter that voters now have more time to vote early, with an extra weekend of in-person early voting being added to the election calendar. But the overall effect is it's harder for people of color, the disenfranchised and underrepresented, to vote. And the majority of those traditionally vote Democrat. Plus, under this new legislation, the Republican-controlled legislature can intervene in and have more influence over the 159 counties that administer the elections. None of the noise changes those facts. And this sort of thing is happening in states all across our democracy as part of a strategy. Details shortly. But back to the noise of the moment and the pressure both sides are applying in Georgia. Think the Masters might pull out of Augusta the day before it all begins? Or that Masters viewers might, in huge numbers, refuse to watch because of all the noise? We'll know soon enough. Seema Modi in Atlanta with what's happening right now in the push and pull of politics en route to the 22 midterms.
Augusta National Golf Club chairman speaking out for the first time on Georgia's voting law, but declined to say whether the institution he represents is for or against the law.
I believe, as does everyone in our organization, that the right to vote is fundamental in our democratic society. No one should be disadvantaged in exercising that right.
Lawmakers, including State Representative Marvin Lim, strongly believe the Augusta National Golf Club, which has long faced criticism over demographics, should break from history of not weighing in on issues and take a stand.
I personally think the Masters and the PGA should pull out of Georgia. Listen, the PGA already pulled out of a tour championship at a Trump club because of the January 6th insurrection. The same voting fraud narrative, a falsehood, that led to that insurrection is what motivated SB 202.
According to a YouGov poll from late March, Americans narrowly oppose laws that make it harder to vote, 44% to 39%. Residents in Atlanta are split on what the Masters should do.
In the All-Star game, the Masters, I don't care what sports event, I don't think they should pull out.
Everything that I know about the Masters, they don't really get bullied by anybody, so I think it's kind of like a red herring of sorts to expect them to do anything about this.
And a boycott that was set to go into effect today, targeting some of the biggest companies here in Atlanta, has now been postponed. A prominent religious leader, Bishop Jackson, here in Georgia, says the CEO and chairman of Coca-Cola, James Quincy, reached out to set up a meeting with him and other corporate leaders. That meeting now set for next week. Shep?
Seema, thanks. While the Georgia boycott may be on hold, restrictive election laws are not. This is the strategy across the nation. 47 states considering a change to voting laws to make it harder or make it take longer to do your duty and vote. And the trend is accelerating. State lawmakers have introduced 361 restrictive bills as of 2 weeks ago. That's 108 more than in February, according to the Brennan Center for Justice. Texas advancing a bill to limit voting by mail, tighten early voting hours, and ban mobile or drive-through voting. Arizona advancing 7 restrictive bills, making it harder to vote by mail and easier to remove voters from early voting lists. In New Hampshire, 10 restrictive bills are moving forward, banning registration on Election Day, targeting student voters by banning college ID cards as valid identification. Florida focusing on absentee balloting by banning ballot drop boxes and limiting ballot delivery. And much of the strategy is attacking local election officials after they resisted pressure to change the voting results last year. The most secure election in history, according to President Trump's own officials. A Missouri bill, for example, would strip funding from local officials if they don't purge voters who the Secretary of State asked them to remove. And as 538 reported, the 4 states where the greatest number of voting restrictions bills have been filed, Georgia, Arizona, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, were some of the closest states in last year's presidential election. It's a strategy. Later this hour, we'll dive into the outlier, that is Kentucky, the first red state to expand voting laws. COVID Watch first. Nationwide, just five states reported nearly half of all new cases over the past week. The hot spots include New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Florida, and Michigan. That's from Johns Hopkins. The cluster's putting even more pressure on the Biden administration to consider changing how it distributes the vaccines. Earlier today, I spoke with the press secretary, Jen Psaki, about what the White House plans to do to try to slow the surges in those five states.
We're taking two approaches here. The first is we are continuing to increase our vaccine supply to states across the country. Over just the last three weeks, we have sent almost 90 million doses out to states across the country. We also know that one size does not fit all. And in these states where we've seen upticks, we are taking targeted approaches. We're working closely with the government. In each of these states, we're deciding how we can get vaccines to different communities that need it more.
One of those communities that needs help right now is Wayne County, which includes Detroit. Cases there are rising, and health officials say they're working to get shots into arms as quickly as humanly possible. NBC's Priscilla Thompson, live outside a vaccination site at Ford Field. Priscilla?
Well, Shep, state officials are saying vaccinating young people is now crucial to their plan in curbing those COVID spikes. And that is because of the data that is coming out among that group specifically. Among children under the age of 10, the average COVID cases have risen by 230% since mid-February. And the second highest spike was seen among the group ages 10 to 19 years old, seeing a 227% increase. So very concerning numbers. And consider this. 40% of all of the outbreaks, the clusters that this state is seeing, are coming from schools and youth sports. Now, I spoke to a number of parents today who came to get their teens vaccinated as soon as they were eligible. Take a listen to what one mom shared with me.
Knowing that my son is going to go after spring break back into a school environment where probably a lot of people have been traveling, it is concerning. It is very scary to think about our kids, our most valuable asset, are not protected at this point.
And even as vaccine eligibility is expanding in this state, health professionals are still working to shore up those disparities and break down those barriers to access. To give you an example, here at Ford Field, the mass vaccination site set up by the federal government in partnership with the state, while the city of Detroit is nearly 80% black, only 9.5% of the vaccines that have been distributed here have gone into the arms of black patients, Shep. So still a lot of work to be done here as the state works to expand their vaccine eligibility. Shep.
Priscilla, thank you. President Biden says America needs to take bold action in addressing the nation's infrastructure needs. But Republicans say the $2 trillion plan funds too many projects that have absolutely nothing to do with infrastructure. Next, is there room for compromise? Tiger doesn't remember. There were no eyewitnesses. Tonight, the black box data helps reveal the cause of the crash that injured Tiger Woods. And the virus kept us home in droves, surrounded by all our stuff and more stuff and more stuff. Later this news hour, how pandemic purging and organizing became ginormous business.
The facts, the truth, the news with Shepard Smith, back in 60 seconds.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
CNBC has quick and easy to understand business news updates at the open, midday, and close every weekday. Markets, money, and more from Wall Street to Main Street. I'm CNBC's Jessica Ettinger. Follow and listen to CNBC Business News Updates wherever you get your podcasts.
Today, President Biden is pushing back against Republican critics who claim his $2 trillion infrastructure plan is full of things that are not infrastructure.
The idea of infrastructure has always evolved to meet the aspirations of the American people and their needs. And it's evolving again today. But to automatically say that the only thing that's infrastructure is a highway, a bridge, or whatever, that's just not rational.
Well, GOP lawmakers have criticized parts of the president's infrastructure proposal, including funding for affordable housing, child care, and home care. Infrastructure? Today, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell doubled down on his opposition to the president's plan, calling it a Trojan horse.
There's broad bipartisan support for tackling the infrastructure issue, but it depends on what your definition is. I think infrastructure is roads, is bridges, it's broadband. But beyond that, they've sort of thrown everything but the kitchen sink into it.
President Biden argued that a major infrastructure package with investments in research and development is crucial to compete with China and prevent America from falling further behind. CNBC senior White House correspondent Kayla Tausche now. Kayla?
Shep, the word infrastructure was trending on Twitter for most of the day as parties toyed with just how loosely the word could be defined. According to Democrats, paid leave is infrastructure, housing is infrastructure, and care work is infrastructure because it enables all other work. Republicans replied the Keystone XL was infrastructure, as is election integrity, and a tongue-in-cheek suggestion, my pillows are infrastructure too. But behind these social media missives is a very real debate raging about what's reasonable to include in the White House's plan if it's being branded as such. By our counting, just about half of the $2 trillion price tag comprises projects normally funded by Congress under infrastructure programs, plus broadband, power grids, and water pipes. Other items like rehabbing schools and housing facilities and strengthening supply chains do involve some construction, but they are non-traditional. And the largest line item, elder care, is the one that requires the most imagination. And today, another obstacle for the American jobs plan. Economists at Penn Wharton suggest there's no long-term return on investment and that the package decreases economic growth in each of the next three decades. President Biden, for his part, said the size and scope are up for negotiation, but there will be a package.
We'll be open to good ideas and good faith negotiations. But here's what we won't be open to. We will not be open to doing nothing. Inaction simply is not an option.
In that same speech, President Biden said he would have been willing to compromise on stimulus if the Republican offer wasn't so small. It's easy to see recent history potentially repeating itself. Jeff?
Kayla, thanks. President Biden expected to announce new executive actions on guns tomorrow. The administration has reportedly been considering requiring background checks on so-called ghost guns, ones that are made with parts purchased online that are nearly impossible to trace. Earlier, I asked the president's press secretary about his plans. The president is scheduled to unveil a series of executive orders tomorrow to help curb gun violence. First, can you give us a preview? And second, is there any sense that he is giving up now on comprehensive gun reform through Congress?
Absolutely not. He looks at this. He has been a lifelong advocate for common sense gun safety measures. He fought to put the Brady Bill, make the Brady Bill law, increase background checks. He fought to get an assault weapons ban in place. He led the effort to put nearly two dozen executive actions in place during the Obama-Biden administration. So what he's going to be announcing tomorrow are steps he can take as president of the United States using his levers, some in partnership with the Department of Justice, to put in place executive actions, provide additional guidance for states looking to put in place their own laws. But he's also simultaneously going to continue to work with leaders in Congress on moving forward the two background check bills that are moving their way, that have moved their way through the House, to push for an assault weapons ban, putting that in place, and to work through legislation, because that's the only way we'll have permanent change and permanent reforms.
So there you have it, that announcement tomorrow. You can see my full interview with the press secretary at CNBC.com, including how the administration plans to solve the migrant surge at the southern border. What's in a name? Well, a lot if it's a controversial one these days. And that's why San Diego decided to rename dozens of its schools. Coming up, why the school board is having second thoughts. Plus, anxiety. depression, and insomnia, all neurological conditions. And new research shows one in three COVID survivors will develop at least one. Millions of Americans. Up next, how doctors plan to handle all these new patients.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
One country moves closer to building a nuclear weapon as we go around the world on CNN. Iran, the regime's timeline to produce a nuclear weapon now falling to a matter of months. The head of its Atomic Energy Agency claims that the state on state-run TV that Iran's stockpile of enriched uranium has moved its nuclear program closer to weapons-grade levels. The remarks one day after officials from five world powers began a new effort to bring the U.S. back into the 2015 nuclear deal. President Trump pulled out of the deal in 2018 and imposed harsh sanctions. Iran responded by ramping up uranium enrichment and violating restrictions in the deal. Brazil. New data shows poverty has tripled in 2021, and nearly 17 million Brazilians are dragged into poverty during the first quarter of this year alone. The reason? An aid program that gave almost $60 billion to Brazil's poor expired at the end of last year. Now all the people it helped are feeling the brutal financial impact of COVID. Researchers estimate almost 13% of Brazil's population, some 27 million people, are now living below the poverty line of $44 a month. Nepal. Mount Everest opened for business after being closed for a year due to COVID. The country relies heavily on tourism. Everest, with the world's highest peak, is one of its main attractions. Visitors will have a one-week quarantine requirement and need a certificate showing a negative COVID test. 2 years ago, tourism brought in more than $2 billion and employed a million people. And that's our trip around the world on CNBC. For months, European nations have gone back and forth between touting AstraZeneca's vaccine and halting that vaccine's rollout. The reason? Some people who received the shot reported getting serious blood clots. Today, those concerns came more sharply into focus. The European Union's drug regulator reports it found a possible link between the AstraZeneca shot and a rare but potentially deadly blood clot. The health agency reaffirms that the benefits of the vaccine outweigh the risks. But health officials in the UK are now recommending that people under the age of 30 get any shot but AstraZeneca. Keep in mind, the FDA has yet to approve the company's vaccine for use in the United States, so nobody here gets it. But the possible side effect could have serious implications, both in terms of the vaccine's use around the world and vaccine hesitancy overall. New data suggests roughly one-third of COVID patients develop a neurological or mental health disorder. These patients received mental health diagnoses within 6 months of getting infected. That's according to a recent study published by the journal Lancet. Here are the most common problems. 17% of patients suffer from anxiety, 14% with mood disorders, 7% say they abuse substances, and 5% report having insomnia. In all, 13% of these patients say it was their first recorded neurological or mental health diagnosis. Let's turn to Dr. Sue Varma. She's a clinical assistant professor of psychiatry at NYU Langone Medical Center. Doctor, thank you. How concerned are you about the long-term impact of COVID on all of our mental health?
I'm very concerned because prior to this, we were talking about the mental health fallout just from the loss and the grief and the economic impact. And now we're going to add to that neuropsychiatric symptoms, as you mentioned, anything from anxiety, depression, but also headaches, tingling, numbness, weakness, fatigue, and what we call brain fog, where a lot of people are saying that I'm having memory deficits. I go into one room and I forget what it is that I came for. I can't remember the names, or executive impairment, executive functioning impairment. So I am very concerned about these symptoms.
We know many people get COVID without ever developing common symptoms at all. It seems possible that some people battling mental health problems could have had COVID and had no idea they had COVID. Is this something doctors are seeing more often?
Yes. You know, some of the patients that actually came to me, only now in retrospect are we putting it together that perhaps they might have had symptoms of COVID that flew under the radar, that were not noticeable, that didn't cause any functional impairment. And get this, the first presenting symptom of having had COVID was anxiety or depression. And we're only recognizing this now. And what's concerning to me is that although what the more serious symptoms are rare, things like blood clots, dementia, strokes, these are very concerning, even though they're rare. And some people are saying even psychotic symptoms. So having paranoid delusions of people coming after them, or people presenting with psychiatric symptoms for the very first time in their life in their 40s, who are otherwise very high functioning or didn't have any psychiatric problems.
Doctor, can't thank you enough. During today's testimony in the Derek Chauvin trial, conflicting claims over some of the last words spoken by the victim while the defendant's knee was pressed against his neck, and nearly two dozen accusations of sexual misconduct leveled against Deshaun Watson. Tonight, how major brands tied to the quarterback are now responding.
Pandemic purging. People using their free time to clear out their clutter, and your trash becoming someone else's money pit. Kentucky's governor signing a new law expanding voting rights, one with buy-in from both sides of the aisle. How'd that happen? And the special agent who led a Minnesota state investigation into the death of George Floyd takes the stand.
And a short clip of police body cam video took center stage in that murder trial today. Specifically, what did George Floyd say as Derek Chauvin's knee pressed into his neck? It's quick, it's a bit garbled, it is hard to make out, but the defense claims you can hear Floyd say, "I ate too many drugs." Carefully, listen for yourself. Well, the special agent who led a state investigation of George Floyd's death took the stand and listened to that clip. He initially agreed with the defense that it sounded to him like Floyd said, "I ate too many drugs." But then he changed his mind when the prosecution played a longer version.
Having heard it in context, are you able to tell what Mr. Floyd is saying there?
Yes, I believe Mr. Floyd was saying, "I ain't do no drugs."
The defense has been trying to make the case that drugs played a role in George Floyd's death. NBC's Gabe Gutierrez live outside the courthouse tonight. Gabe?
Hey there, Shep. Yeah, the defense is raising more questions about George Floyd's drug use. It's also raising questions about that crowd of bystanders that the defense says may have distracted Chauvin. Now, Chauvin's defense attorney in his most aggressive cross-examination yet questioned an LAPD sergeant, an outside use of force expert who called Chauvin's actions excessive.
A reasonable officer could perceive the words that people are saying and the tone that it is being said in as a threat or a risk to the officer's safety. Agreed?
A risk, possibly, but officers are typically trained that when it comes to verbal threats.
Now, that LAPD sergeant said that Chauvin's 866 hours of training should have prepared him to deal with that crowd, which included a 9-year-old girl. But, Shep, as you mentioned, the defense team has been arguing that Floyd's drug use and underlying health conditions led to his death. Today, the attorney for Floyd's family was having none of it.
Even I was surprised that he has the audacity to say, "Oh, it's the crowd's fault. These angry people," which I think is a suggested way of trying to say these angry black people. It's just asinine.
Testimony continues tomorrow, Shep. We're expecting to hear from more medical experts. Shep.
Gabe Gutierrez, thank you. David Henderson now, civil rights attorney, former prosecutor, CNBC contributor. David, You never know in a courtroom what little bit is going to strike a chord for the jury. And the defense is clearly hoping that that 6 seconds will make an impact on this group. What do you think?
You know, I hate this testimony, Shep, because it's offensive. I think it is irrelevant, and the judge should have shut it down. At the same time, it does work, especially with conservative jurors. They don't like drug use. And even though we're quibbling over exactly what was said on the video, the main point is it's more talk about George Floyd using drugs. It's just a question about exactly how much he used.
Mm. There's a method to the way they're calling witnesses here, the prosecution. There's an order. And I wonder what you think of it.
You know, Shep, I thought the order was good up to a point, but I second guessed that with the professional witness that we had today, the use of force expert, because due to no fault of his own, he answers questions like a professional witness, polite, to the point, concise, but that's why the defense was able to gain ground with him. So I think it would have been better to call him before the police chief. That way the police chief can come back and put a polite face on what the state's ultimate position in the case is.
David, you've been criticizing the prosecution throughout this trial for having just too many lawyers at the table. Today they had four of them. What is the message there?
Shep, it's not just that they had four lawyers. They had four lawyers, and one of the most memorable lawyers, Jerry Blackwell, wasn't one of the four, which means they have at least five. And the message is, as we've talked about before, you're creating a David and Goliath theme where you're Goliath. Generally speaking, when you have large trial teams, the rule is never more than two lawyers at counsel table. Never, ever, ever, ever. You don't want to look like you're teaming up on someone, and that's the message that's being communicated to the jury.
You've said repeatedly you think that this case is heading toward prosecution. Did today change anything? Anything stand out today?
Nothing really stood out today. It's hard to know what the jurors made of the testimony overall. At the end of the day, if you are a racist juror, if you are conservative and don't like drug use, then the way the testimony came out today in a dog whistle fashion, it does appeal to you. But the bottom line is this, Shep. We're not going to have a Johnny Cochran trial personality come out of this case. The lawyers are being driven almost exclusively by the witnesses and the facts. And ultimately, the state's case is stronger.
And the state thinks that they'll wrap up likely sometime, maybe the end of the week or Monday. David, thanks so much. Kentucky signed into law today legislation that would make it easier for people to vote, bucking the trend of the rest of the country, becoming the only Republican majority state to do so.
When much of the country has put in more restrictive laws, that Kentucky legislators, Kentucky leaders were able to come together to stand up for democracy and to expand the opportunity for people to vote.
A Democratic governor in a deep red state working out a compromise in the name of democracy. NBC News' Jane Timm now. Jane, what are the highlights of this new law in the Bluegrass State?
Good evening, Shep. Now, this bill makes a lot of pandemic election reforms permanent. So that means 3 days of early voting, drop boxes, a portal where voters can request their absentee ballots, and a cure process. So if you make a mistake on that absentee ballot, you can fix it before it is thrown out and not counted. Now, there's something for everyone in this bill. There's also ballot integrity measures like ballot collection rules that regulate who else can handle your ballot. Now, the Republicans did very well in Kentucky in 2020 with pandemic-related expansions. So while Democrats also like expansions like this because they think it'll help turn out more voters of color, what you're seeing is two parties that agree it might be good for their interests to let more people vote and to modernize the process. Huh.
You know, many Republicans elsewhere have been saying that some of these new restrictive bills are not restrictive because they're similar to laws in New York, New Jersey, and for that matter, Colorado. But how do they compare?
You know, we've seen a lot of Republicans who are pointing to blue states and saying that there's, not enough early voting. That's a pretty key complaint they've had. But we've seen a lot of experts tell me that what matters is where the states are trending, not where they've been in the past. Shep?
Jane Timm, thank you. St. Louis breaks the political glass ceiling on a CNBC trip coast to coast. Missouri. Tashara Jones, now the first black woman elected mayor of St. Louis. Jones won the general election yesterday, beating out Kara Spencer with more than 51% of the vote. She's been the city's treasurer for 8 years. Her campaign focused primarily on curbing a spike in homicides across St. Louis. She's set to be sworn in April 20th. California. 44 schools in San Francisco named after historically black, I should say, after historic figures will not be renamed after all. School board officials voted yesterday to suspend the controversial plan. Earlier this year, they moved to rename the schools because they paid tribute to people with what they say is a controversial past. Some of them include Washington, Lincoln, and Jefferson. Parents immediately came out against the whole idea. The school board says it wants to avoid frivolous litigation. Texas. Video shows a fast food employee leap through a drive-thru window and attack a customer. Look at this. Happened last month in the Dallas suburb of Red Oak. The victim says he tried to redeem a coupon. Words were exchanged, and the next thing you know, the employee reaches into the victim's car and starts wailing on him. No arrests, but the victim says he was injured and will be suing. Major brands are now publicly distancing themselves from NFL quarterback Deshaun Watson after allegations of sexual misconduct. Today, Nike suspended its endorsement deal with the quarterback. In a statement, the company said it is deeply concerned by the disturbing allegations and that it will closely monitor the situation. Hours later, the headphones company Beats by Dre terminated its partnership with Deshaun Watson. 22 women are suing the quarterback for alleged sexual misconduct. One of them spoke publicly yesterday and for the first time. Ashley Solis is a massage therapist. She says Deshaun Watson exposed himself and touched her inappropriately last year during a session at her home. Watson has denied all of the allegations against him. His lawyer says the lawsuits were brought after the quarterback refused what he called baseless settlement demands. CNBC sports business reporter Jabari Young now. Jabari, Deshaun Watson stands to lose a lot of money here.
Good evening, Chef. Yes, he does. Listen, it may not be a lot of money for top tier athletes, but, you know, according to Forbes, you know, back in September 2020, he made about $8 million in endorsements last season, last year in 2020 alone. So you have to figure that that was going to line up again for 2021. And not even to mention that, you know, he still has an extension that's going to kick in 2022 season. So depending on his status, he may miss out on that type of money as well. Not even to mention, hey, does he even play in the 2021 season? Should these allegations follow him into the year? So he's definitely, on target of losing a substantial amount of money. But again, just allegations, and you got to see how it plays out. But certainly not looking good for him right now.
Yeah, he has denied them. Jabari, in your article today, you compared Watson's situation to two NFL greats, Big Ben Roethlisberger and Michael Vick. Both players face legal troubles, but their sponsors reacted very differently. Does race play a factor?
You know, Chef, I think you have to ask the question, will race play a factor in this particular situation? You go back in 2009 and 10 when Ben Roethlisberger, again, he was not charged in any of these allegations, but, right. You know, sponsors did stick with him. Nike, Dick's Sporting Goods, they stuck with him. I was looking at an article that we wrote on CNBC years ago about how Dick's was going to stick with him throughout and how Nike was going to let the legal system play out. Does that happen for Deshaun Watson as well? You know, Nike suspended their relationship, not terminated like Beats by Dre, but does that play out the same way? Because, again, even though he's facing more allegations, it doesn't matter. 1, 2, 10, any type of allegation that involves sexual misconduct, sexual assault is serious. And you know, you obviously brands don't want to be put in no spotlight. But will they let the process play out and give him the due diligence? And time will tell.
Jabari, thank you. And as the Masters gets underway, Tiger obviously won't be there, home recovering from the crash that severely injured his right leg. Next, investigators today reveal the cause of the wreck. And COVID changed so much so quickly. And some of that early shock was about basic things that became tough to get. Tonight, how the radical shift in how we live is causing a run on America's Vegetable. Carnival Cruise Line threatening to jump ship. And that's what's topping CNBC's On the Money. Carnival's president says the company may be forced to move its ships out of U.S. waters if the CDC doesn't erase COVID restrictions. They haven't sailed in more than a year. Officials at the CDC say cruises could resume by midsummer, but with restrictions. Tom Brady launching an NFT company this spring called Autograph. CNN reports a rep for the Buccaneers quarterback tells them the platform will bring together the biggest names in pop culture. Besides digital collectibles, Autograph is also set to have live auctions, physical product drops, and in-person experiences. And one of the few copies of the comic book that introduced Superman to the world just sold for a record price. Action Comics number one went for $3.25 million in a private sale. It sold for 10 cents when released back in 1938. Inflation, you know. On Wall Street, the Dow up 16, S&P up 6, but the NASDAQ down 9. Excuse me. Tiger Woods was flying on the winding hillside road when he crashed his SUV back in February and seriously hurt his leg. Today, officials say the speed was the main factor. 84 to 87 miles an hour in a 45 zone. That's what the cops say the black box recovered from the car revealed, according to investigators. No sign he braked at all. In fact, they say he may have accidentally hit the accelerator instead of the brake before he crashed. Officials also say there's no proof that Tiger was distracted or impaired.
There was no odor of alcohol. There were no open containers in the vehicle. And there were no narcotics or any evidence of medication in the vehicle or on his person.
Tiger said to be recovering at home in Florida. Doctors say multiple fractures to his lower right leg. Tiger responding that he'll continue to focus on recovery and family, and he thanked everyone for the overwhelming support and encouragement, as he put it. Tiger's all that he's received during this difficult time. Here at CNBC, first in business worldwide, they cover all sorts of short squeezes, right? GameStop, AMC, Silver, you name it. But here on the news, we have the real short squeeze covered. It's ketchup. And the net great shortage of 2021. With takeout booming, ketchup has become the condiment that in currency for restaurants. According to one estimate, costs for individual little packets of ketchup are up 13% since last year. Following every move of the condiment crisis, here's CNBC's Kate Rogers.
Is ketchup the new Clorox wipes? Demand for the condiment at home, in restaurants, and to go is on the rise. People are even bidding for packets on eBay. Industry leader Heinz says demand was greater than supply over the course of the pandemic. It's ramped up production to make 25% more product. That's 12 billion ketchup packets a year. The company's also added 40 new jobs and fast-tracked some COVID-safe innovations, like no-touch dispensers, ready in just 4 months, debuting last fall. But some restaurants are already feeling the squeeze. When the pandemic hit, Texas Roadhouse shifted its business model from in-store dining to takeout and delivery. As consumers order out more and begin dining on-site again, the company says it's running low on ketchup.
When we first started having shortages, it was like, what can we do? And so, you know, our operators were having to run out to Costco or Sam's Clubs and buy. Well, and that's just not sustainable.
The company has just over 600 locations and used nearly 55 million ounces of ketchup in 2020. It partners with Heinz, but will start to test French's ketchup and its own private label in stores.
We just really kind of put in this position. It's not what we wanted to do, but once we realized we have to do it, we've gone all guns blazing.
But there's not an industry-wide shortage, says Golden State Foods, which produces and distributes ketchup and other condiments in the quick service and fast food space. There's been a dramatic lift in business, but the company said it anticipated demand and planned ahead.
We chose to take a little bit more of an adventurous approach to COVID and to be ready to serve our customers when the business came back and the market opened back up again. And today we're living through the advantages of that choice.
Texas Roadhouse's Doster said he's even seen people pick up packets off the table in business lunch meetings to take them home. Normally those would be tossed away after a meal. People really love their ketchup, but Shep, no comment from the mustard industry.
All right, thanks so much. At least the weather's warming, right? Flowers are blooming. In many parts of the country, spring is in the air. Normally, That means spring cleaning, right? But with so many of us cooped up indoors over the past year, it seems the dust has mostly been busted. So we're moving on from COVID cleaning to pandemic purging. Throw it away. Here's CNBC's Andrea Day.
Less is more. Less clutter for people like Florida retirees Missy and Tom Kester.
Those items today were young man's treasures that I'm getting too old to use, and the COVID's preventing any kind of yard sale.
And 50% more business, according to College Hunks, a moving company that hauled away 200 tons of junk last year.
People are in their homes, they're coming face to face with their stuff and realizing that they want to clear out more space.
And it's not just pandemic purging. Americans are gung-ho to organize inside and out.
You know, it's always been something that's been on the back burner.
In Nebraska, John Southwick finally got the shelves he wanted to straighten out the garage.
So we're seeing people kind of invest in their own space by adding an efficient storage solution.
LevRack, a direct-to-consumer storage company, says its revenue doubled at the end of 2020, due in part to its increased popularity among residential customers like Southwick. Others, like Amanda Memel, are seeking professional help. She hired Hoarderly, a firm that specializes in organizing.
When it came down to thinking of unpacking those bags, it kind of gave me a headache.
Memel and her husband moved in October, working from home ever since.
They could easily just pull everything out of boxes and kind of shove it away, but they wanted their space set up right.
The first few months of the year have been the busiest Hoarderly has ever been. Jamie and Philip Hoard say business is expected to quadruple in 2021.
We were blown away with the number of deposits and the number of new bookings.
All right, Shep, and they have three times more jobs than they've ever had before, and they're working to hire even more people. And get this, it takes 300 hours, Shep, to train each new employee. Now, that means learning how to sort and fold clothing. That could take weeks to perfect. Like they say, organization is the key to success. Shep?
Oof, then I'm failing. Thank you, Andrea Day. Why did the giant lizard go to the grocery store? Well, it scared the hell out of customers in Thailand. This six-foot shopper's great escape to satisfy a craving next. And teenagers, the up-and-coming generation, the future of our nation, we look at the issues on which they're focused and where they're spending their money. And why they're taking it back. Way back. You've been listening to the CNBC podcast, The News with Shepard Smith. You can always catch us live weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, only on CNBC.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.